Good afternoon. I'd like to open the interim committee of the Senate Education Workforce Development. And we are going to take a closer inspection today on this 11 through 14 area of our educational continuum, specifically dual credits and how we can get more kids involved in them. Oregon does a pretty good job already in this area, but we'd like to do better. So we have a couple panels of experts to sort of show us the way and report back on how things are going and how they might be doing better. So why don't we start with a panel here. I'd like to call up Larry Cheney, Reynold Gardner, and Andrea Morgan. Welcome to all of you. Whoever wants to best set the stage here.
Senator Hess and members of the committee, my name is Reynold Gardner. I'm with the Oregon Department of Education. We appreciate the opportunity to come and share with you today some of the accelerated college credit opportunities that exist within the state of Oregon and address some of the areas that the research has identified are ways to help students transitioning on to post-secondary opportunities or post-secondary opportunities. Additionally, we're going to identify some of the items that are taking place within the state of Oregon that's around that research, and then we're going to look at areas where Oregon could focus its attention and then some specific strategies that we feel would help to encourage accelerated college credit opportunities. I would like to start off by talking specifically about some of the dual or some of the accelerated college credit programs that exist within the state of Oregon. Essentially, what is it that Oregon has? And within that, Oregon has a wide variety, and I believe you have a pamphlet in front of you, and on that last page of the accelerated credit curriculum learning primer, there's a table, and within that table you will identify on the left-hand side some of the different options that are available within the state of Oregon. Dual credit. Dual credit is a specific program where high school students are enrolled in high school classes getting college credit, not STEP.
It's often misused, isn't it, that phrase?
It's frequently misused.
I probably am guilty of that. I'm sorry.
So, and in that context, these are high school students that don't step foot on college campuses, but they're getting dual credit. So it is frequently used across the board. Another program that is currently in Oregon with some very explicit standards associated with it is the Expanded Options Program, and that's specifically Revised Statute 340, and that program is high school students that are being supported by the school districts attending college classes, just as any other college class or college student would be participating within that. So it could be a distance learning type course, or they're physically on the campus, but they are still considered a high school or a participant within the high school environment.
For the edification of the committee, can you explain how that works? They're being supported. The school still gets its ABMW?
The school still claims that student as a represented population. They get their ADM, their general fund dollars for that support. And then the statute explicitly identifies what the school district has to do, who is a qualified student, what is expected. The end result when I get an inquiry from a school district is who paid the tuition for that student to participate in those college courses. When it's responded back, the school district, then yes, you have an expanded option student.
Okay, so that means the state is paying that for the school for that student's K through 12, you know, high school education, and then he takes a he or she takes a credit, a PCC course,
or any other course.
And how does the community college get paid?
The community college gets paid directly from the school district for the tuition. The school district's responsible to buy the books and even pay the fees associated with. And the law states that good faith negotiation is to occur between the school district and the eligible post-secondary institution in working out whatever that tuition and fees are for that respective student.
Can you explain that, how that part works? Because that's just part of the rub here.
Specifically within the statute, it identifies that a school district has requirements that they need to notify parents and students of the availability of students to participate in the given program. In that, student has a set time frame that they identify back. Then the school district is to work with post-secondary institutions. The post-secondary institutions, so the community colleges and the OUS universities, have greater liberty as to whether they're going to play with the school districts in that regard.
Meaning they offer a discount?
Whether they offer a discount or even allow admissions for students prior to graduation, prior to assessment, prior to entrance exams. And again, what we ask for is, as long as it's consistent with the manner that you implement and run your other educational programs within. And our specific interface with the Department of Education is with the school districts, as we're encouraging them, giving them support, guidance, and assistance in how do you work with the community colleges or the universities within the state to make that happen.
Well, I don't mean to hang up your presentation here at the beginning, but this is really central. The taxpayers would be then paying for a high school student, high school education, and then paying again for some community college education too. It seems like they're paying double there. This is the part we run into where we've said before in this committee that we almost need kind of a demilitarized zone between 11th and 12th grade and the first 2 years of community college, so that this pay issue doesn't get in the way of doing what's best for that student. And you know, the issue, I can understand high school not wanting to give up its ADM money, and I can understand community college not wanting to give away classes for free. Somebody has to pay those instructors. But is there a better way to do this is part of what we're trying to figure out.
Senator Haas, that is a great question, and I believe we're going to hear from some schools who are effectively implementing the accelerated college credit model coming up later on in our testimonial. And I think there are some schools out there who are doing a very good job about how to implement the program. It is a rub when a student is finding barriers being placed in front of them as they're trying to reach beyond their current educational plan and profile. Going back to the statute is very explicit as to some of the requirements that are associated with each student needs to have an educational plan and profile. It cannot be duplicative credits, meaning if they have English, junior English, and they get writing 121 credit for it through a dual credit model at this high school, a student cannot raise a hand and say, I want to go and take writing 121 at the community college, because the school system would say, well, we already have that program, that offering within the school system. This student within their educational plan and profile can say, I really want to pursue foreign language or statistics, mathematics degree. I've already tapped out all the mathematics available. Now I want to move on to the community college ranks and take higher level, take a statistics class, could be. Within that context, then the school district would be expected to work with that student, and it's not full ADM that transfers over. So the school district still gets to work with that student, engage that student, that student grades, participation still rolls back, and it's up to the individual school systems to work back and forth to help to make that happen. Again, that negotiations that's written into the law.
Well, and the law, in some ways, creates almost a perverse disincentive there.
And to that end, there's a number of school districts that put forth the expanded option waiver. That there is a waiver provision within that law to where they're saying we want to go above and beyond the limitations associated with the expanded options law Therefore, we propose that we're going to do this, and we want to open it up to more than just juniors and seniors. And I am the specialist that processes those waivers as well. So, again, there's some great things that are happening within the field to allow students to promote. But as the school district in these diminishing times, if they're struggling, it is a difficult thing to manage and to allow personnel to negotiate to make these things happen.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gardner, two quick questions if I could. Do you have a sense of what percentage of students in Oregon, high school students in Oregon, participate in programs like this?
We don't have that data available and or the data net to capture that type of information.
Really? Why?
The Expanded Options Program previously had a data collection, data and reporting process, and within that, it was self-reported data, so individuals were reporting, and then even going back to some of the issues associated with that data, the validity of the data, and the time to go through and massage and make sure the data was correct. And then with Senate Bill, I believe it was Senate Bill 800, the Mandate for Relief Act, the report that was asked for from the legislature on the expanded options was diminished in that. Anything that was diminished, we were to lighten the load on the districts, and that was one of the areas where that data reporting element is no longer collected within the stream. Beyond that, we do have other data sources that we can get some indication of students participating in the accelerated college credit programs, but it's not a one-to-one match. Example, Mr. Shane here is going to talk about shortly what Community College Workforce Developments does. They do have a data net for the amount of students that are participating in the dual credit program. Again, that is a specialty program within the matrix of the accelerated college credit.
Right. No, I see that from here.
All right. We'll let you go ahead.
Okay. So the expanded option is another one of the organized, structured, standardized statute or administrative rule that programs that we have available. Additionally, there's the locally developed programs, and some of the best activities that are taking place are the locally developed programs, and that is school districts working, functioning beyond the parameters of the other main programs that are listed above. And this could be a school system that says we want to do expanded option, go above and beyond, so we're going to work it out in a similar manner. Or it's a school that's working with a private college to provide college credit for their students while they're in high school, working towards both graduation as well as college or concurrent enrollment. And Ms. Morgan is going to discuss with us the International Baccalaureate and Advanced Placement.
Good afternoon, Chair House and Committee. Advanced Placement and International Baccalaureate are two other ways that students might possibly earn college credit while they're still in high school. All of the Oregon University System schools and community colleges translate exam scores from International Baccalaureate and Advanced Placement into possible college credit being awarded. So a student can take an Advanced Placement course if they score a 3 to 5 on the AP exam, then it translates into a certain amount of credit depending on the major and the institution, because some of them will grant a little bit more, say, at community college level than they would if they were transferring to the four-year school. But there is a matrix, and it's pretty clear what those scores will transfer to. Advanced Placement and International Baccalaureate are either national or international programs, and again, credit is awarded on the basis of the student's performance on the national or international examinations. Training for teachers, there is no required training for Advanced Placement other than that they submit an approved syllabus for the course. But what we find is sometimes the best AP teachers are not people that have their degree in a particular area, but just they're really enthusiastic about that course. They understand the requirements, and so they're allowed to provide that instruction. International Baccalaureate requires that teachers be trained in their by their organization. Schools have to invest in that program. It's fairly spendy for a district to be an International Baccalaureate district or school. They pay fees each year on a per capita basis. And so in order to offer the courses, and then again, they provide the exams where students at the high school level could end up with what they call the International Baccalaureate Diploma, which is internationally recognized. IB, International Baccalaureate, is a program that was designed for the children of diplomats, and they wanted a diploma that was recognized across the lines of countries. And so that's where the program began. It's headquartered in Geneva, Switzerland. The local office is in New York City for the schools in Oregon. We have 8 or 19 international baccalaureate high schools. We've seen a huge increase in participation in AP and IB since 2002, mainly because of the federal government providing the test fee program funds, which provides test fees for low-income students. And so, once again, after quite a scare earlier on, the U.S. Department of Education came up with enough funding, and they will fully fund the program again this year. And so students that are income qualified pay nothing for their AP exams or their IB exams or registration fees.
If you don't qualify for that low income, what is the cost?
IB exams are $100 a piece. It takes 7 exams to get a diploma, plus a $145 registration fee, which you pay just once. And so sometimes they take part of their exams as a junior, some as a senior, but you only pay one registration. For AP exams, those are $87 per exam. So it's not cheap. Some districts have ways to help fund those exams for students. We have only one district in the state, that's Corbett, that pays the advanced placement exam fees for all students.
And if someone goes through those 7 IB tests, passes them, what does that translate into in terms of college credits at PCC or Portland State? How many, or do you?
Chair House, without having all the specifics right in front of me, and the new, there's a new matrix coming out, generally they end up with at least a full year of credit if they have a full IB
full
diploma.
College year?
Yeah.
That would be like in the university
they
system.
They start
like 45.
Yeah.
That'd be like 45 credits. So if somebody could do that, and while those test scores are...
Test costs are
expensive, a year of college is, would be, you know, 10 times that.
Basically $1,000 for a year of college credit.
Chair House, exactly. The cost savings is dramatic, and many students leave with advanced placement credit, easily getting rid of at least one term of school. Again, for $87 for an examination, and it really is cost effective.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of students taking part in that. Just in
Senator Byer, did you have a question?
What a great idea. I was thinking when my kids, it was a long time ago now, graduated from actually Springfield High School and went to the University of Oregon, they took a lot of AP classes, but I don't remember paying for any tests, but well, at the university there was a process for them to apply, and somewhere in there they reviewed it, and they awarded them college credit for classes they took. Mm-hmm. In any event, I think my daughter ended up with almost 40 hours of credit.
Right.
But I don't remember taking tests to do that, other than they had to request a review of the transcript by the university.
Chair House and Senator Byer, I think sometimes, again, where we call a lot of these programs dual credit as sort of the generic term for all of these, there are some programs where students are taking the course, an actual course, and getting credit, and that is just transcripted to the university or to the community college.
In
the case of advanced placement, and sometimes we call all kinds of accelerated things advanced placement, but now they're getting a little pickier here, wanting it to be the registered trademark curriculum. And so it maybe in that case they were taking accelerated courses, but maybe not these. I think the part that's really exciting, we had about 13,720 students take 21,396 AP exams in 2010-11. And 12,680 of those exams scored between 3 to 5, which meant that that was in the range that they could get credit. International baccalaureate, we had a huge number of students, and I'm not finding it in my 1,832 students took 4,692 exams in 09-10, which is the latest data I have from the International Baccalaureate Organization. But with the TESFI program, just as an idea of how much that spurred growth, in 2002-03, 353 students took AP exams using that program, having their exams paid for. Last year, last school year in 2010-11, 4,664 students took advantage of it. And so we've seen a dramatic increase over the 10 years. And that's why I think we had such fear when we thought the program was going away. Because a lot of low-income students that don't have other ways to get tuition are earning credit through this and, you know, walking out of high school with credits in their back pocket.
I'm not trying to harp on data, but I'm kind of a data geek. So we have data on exactly how many students are getting through IB programs and taking AP class course exams, but we don't have data. I'm not trying to give you a tough time, Mr. Gardner. I'm really not. I understand you're just the messenger, and I'm not trying to shoot you, okay? But I'm still kind of baffled by this because we have no mandate in Oregon to have IB programs or to offer AP classes, although I obviously support them tremendously. But we do have this mandate for the expanded option, and I am puzzled. How do we demonstrate to the feds that we're doing this if we don't have any data on how many kids we're supporting with it? While we can, I mean, I know we can get data from the testing agencies if they are allowed to release that about how many kids take the tests, but I'm sure I'm missing something.
Chair House and Senator Steiner Hayward, in this case, we have two organizations that it's in their interest, of course, to provide this data to the state. And so the College Board, who is responsible for AP, and the International Baccalaureate Organization both provide data to us because of our participation in the TESFI program. It's to their benefit that we have a clear idea,
right?
Because they're receiving that money for those exams. We are basically a pass-through for those federal dollars. The others, I think what you'll find out, though, is we really do have some data, and it's not like we have none. You're going to see that there's a pretty nice chart that I refer to a lot about the number of students that are getting credit using dual credit,
okay,
for instance. And so it's that we don't, not that we don't have any, it's in some places maybe it's not quite as clear as we'd like. But in the case of AP and IB, those organizations provide us with the data.
Thank you.
And Senator Hess and Senator Steiner Hayward, specific, you said, do we have an understanding of the total percentage of students that are participating? Again, we do have those data threads, but we don't have a comprehensive, and then even the data set that the years that they're available, so we would be pulling in the AP and the IB, and we don't know if those are duplicative students, and I would envision that a number of the students that are getting AP credit are also getting dual credit,
right,
credit through the dual credit program,
right,
and maybe participating in the expanded option program. So to present a statistical...
We don't have any idea how many, in other words, we don't have any idea how many unique students are taking advantage of one or more of the available options to them.
Correct. And there is a data stream, specifically through the community college group, the OCRS data collection process, that we do identify the total number of dual credit students who are participating. And then additionally, every other year, there is the Oregon University System dual credit study that is conducted. And that's a very in-depth, hands-on study that's conducted by the university system that teases out a specific research question and then gets down into that data. But again, they're identifying specifically dual credit, which is high school students in a high school classroom getting college credit, not expanded option, not AP, not IB. So the overarching umbrella of accelerated college credit programs, we have the data threads, but we don't have that raw nugget.
Got it. Thank you.
Question.
Oh, Senator Moore.
Yeah, thank you. What percentage of the students that take the tests pass the test? And what kind of a grading system? Is it a pass-fail?
No, for advanced, or Chair House and Senator Morris, it's a scoring system, and so students can score on AP exams from anywhere from a 1 to a 5.
Mm-hmm.
And so a 3, scoring a 3, 4, or 5 will grant you college credit in most cases. On international baccalaureate exams, it's a 6-point scale, and a 4, 5, or 6 on those exams leads to college credit. What we know from that is that in Oregon, I think it's out of 21,000 exams, 12,680 scored in the 3, 4, or 5. And what we've noticed as we've increased the pool of students, there was one thing that was kind of a concern, that as you expanded the pool, getting more low-income students into this pool, they feared that we would see a decrease in the percentage of students scoring in the range for college credit. And actually, Oregon has been trending upward. So we've had increased numbers of students participating, more low-income students participating, and we continue to see more students scoring 3, 4s, and 5s. So I think it says that Oregon teachers are paying attention to the curriculum guides. It says that they are helping prepare students, so even more over time are going to be scoring in that range.
Senator Haas, members of the committee, I'm Larry Shane with the Oregon Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, and thank you for the opportunity to come and talk about dual credit, the I guess we could say trademarked dual credit in Oregon.
Yeah.
To your point earlier, what I'm going to speak to specifically are the concurrent enrollment programs that the community colleges participate in. A little bit around the Oregon University System schools as well, but the data elements are definitely community colleges that I'm familiar with. And pick up on a couple of the threads from the earlier conversation as well. Actually, in Oregon, the community colleges are required by statute to provide some type of accelerated learning opportunity. And it could be a combination of several, but it has to be at least one. Many of them, well, all of them participate in concurrent enrollment or dual enrollment, provide those types of courses. Many of them also do the expanded options that Reynold talked about earlier, or they may have the early college or middle college, some of those types of options as well. I think we're in the neighborhood of 11% of Oregon's seniors participated in dual credit or concurrent enrollment. And that would also include the university system offerings. 4 of the 7 OUS schools offer a concurrent enrollment program. And just the community colleges alone, on average, have been in the 3,000 students a year. That's unduplicated headcount participating. And they're earning right around 26,000 credits a year. And again, we can also look at that in terms of lower division collegiate or career and technical education courses, too. We're able to break that out as well. When you look at that compared to other states, as you mentioned earlier, Senator Haas, it is a pretty good number. It seems really low. And admittedly, 11% is low. It'd be nice to see it higher than that. But compared to other states, a lot of states are in the 4, 5, 6% range right now. So we're a little bit ahead, but we know that we could make a lot more headway as in that arena. Really, And around 2005, there was quite a groundswell around accelerated learning, a lot of interest in it in terms of it being a great program for students to get involved in, or a combination of programs to get involved in. And then also some real interest in looking at the quality of the types of programs that we're talking about. And so there are a number of national studies and some research done that Oregon really picked up on, and with some really, I mean, I'm not trying to butter you guys up, but some really good legislative leadership and some laws that were put in place, Oregon established some standards for dual credit programs. We modeled those on national standards that are in place for, there's an accrediting body called the National Alliance for Concurrent Enrollment Partnerships, and we modeled Oregon standards on their standards. Also put into play the study that Reynolds was talking about earlier, where we look at dual credit in Oregon and how students perform. So it's not just how many students are doing this, but how are they performing? How do they do when they go to the university or they go to the community college compared to their peers that didn't have those opportunities? And they do quite well. And we do that study right now every other year, but with the passage of Senate Bill 254, we'll be switching that to an annual study. So that'll be very helpful as well. And then a lot of that research recommended that policies be put into place, both local policies and statewide policies, to really have those quality standards in place and have articulation agreements in place and be very intentional about these offerings for students.
Mr. Chang, could you just educate me a little bit more about the metrics that you're using to determine, when you say that the students have had this opportunity to participate in these programs, do better than students who haven't once they get to either a full on-campus community college or four-year program. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about the metrics you're using, just so I understand better.
Okay. Senator Steinert-Hayward and Chair Haas, and I may have Reynolds help me with this as well, because he may have looked at it more recently than I in terms of the metrics. Essentially, they're looking at, I may not answer your question either. I apologize up front. They look at how those students do in a similar course. So, for instance, writing 121, when that student transitions to the next course in the sequence, writing 122, how do they do compared to a student that took writing 121 when they were a freshman in college, so not while they were in high school? So they look at it over in terms of sequencing. They look at it, they've looked at it in terms of their GPA. How's their GPA compared to their peers? And I think there's one other one.
Persistence.
Oh, yes.
The continuation within their degree track.
That's going to be my next question. And just to follow on the persistence question, do they look at actual degree completion or program completion, however you want to define that? Because some of them may be in doing some kind of CTE, I would think.
That is a great question, Senator Steinert-Hayward and Chair Haas. Reynolds mentioned that the Oregon University system really does the heavy lift on this study right now. The first group of students they looked at were in, I believe, they were high school students in 06.
Okay.
I think that's when they graduated from high school. So we probably could start looking at degree completion. And I think that's a conversation we had with our colleagues at OUS the last time we talked about the next study.
Well, even with two-year degrees, I mean, even if they choose to, if what they want to do professionally, or if their educational aspirations at that point are to complete a two-year degree and not use it to transfer immediately, but to go out and do something else with it, which is a perfectly reasonable choice, you should have those. I mean, we should have some sense by now of those.
Yeah. Senator Haas and Senator Hayward, the specific focus of that, the 07 study, which was published in 2008, and then the 2010 study, did not look at degree completion. I don't know if certificates rolled into that, but they had a specific null hypothesis that they were trying to tease out, that was there a significant difference between dual credit students versus non. And the results came back on both of those studies was that dual credit students are just as viable, even at a greater rate than none. And then the second study that was conducted, they looked at series completion and then advancing on. So writing 121, 122, 123, then advancing into a writing 200 series. And what was the success of those students at the next phase? And again, that analysis came back very favorable for the dual credit students.
Thank you. And you did answer my question quite nicely.
Oh,
thank
great.
You.
I understood what metrics were.
I wasn't too worried about that.
In terms of the research that I mentioned earlier, a lot of that, a lot of the recommendations that came out of that national research talked about access, affordability, and intentionality on behalf of students or on the part of students and parents and families. And I think that's probably the direction that, you know, when you ask the question, what can we do to expand these or increase these, that's probably the big focus area for Oregon. In terms of, we have that going on in some really good models, and you're going to hear about them in short measure. But in terms of something comprehensive, it's definitely an area to be explored.
It's almost promotion. I mean, we passed a couple of bills in recent years, the recent session, 254, you noted, but you're saying there's not much more. I mean, we have these programs. It's more of like pulling a kid into the classroom and saying, here, do this. Start studying.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Senator Hass, that's a great point. And I was just looking at McMinnville High School's their course bulletin, and that's a school that has done a tremendous amount. They've moved the needle so far in 5-6 years on what they offer to students. It's and it really does come down to, they promote it. They parents understand, students understand, teachers are on board, guidance and counseling are on board, and they're a huge provider of these opportunities for students now, primarily dual credit and advanced placement.
And you're seeing about 11%. There's about 11% participation among seniors.
Yeah,
and
dual credit. Yeah,
in just dual credit.
Yeah.
What's the percentage overall for all of these programs?
That's
Senator. Again, that analysis hasn't been conducted, so I would hate to throw a number out. Just stabbing in the dark without having the numbers or the data behind to back it up.
My concern, if I may, Mr. Chair, is this. You know, you brought up the point earlier that we have to understand the economic implications of for the K-12 districts who are helping to pay for this education. Don't get us wrong. I think everybody on this committee is very supportive of this. We're just trying to understand the economic ramifications of it. And until we have some sense of how many students are participating in one or more of these programs, it's almost impossible for us to determine the cost to the K-12 districts. And parsing out, you know, how much does it cost to teach writing 121 at Reynolds High School as opposed to teaching it at Clackamas Community College or Mount Hood or, you know, wherever people want to go. Mount Hood's probably closer. But something like that, those are sort of, the calculus there gets a little complicated, and until we have some sense of participation, it becomes more challenging.
Mm-hmm. Senator Steiner Hayward and Senator Hass, one thing on the horizon that I think is going to help quite a bit with this is the development of the statewide longitudinal data system, and where we can really, for lack of a better term, track an individual, you know, through their education experience and even into the workforce. That's going to help quite a bit. And I know that there's been a lot of conversation with those that are involved in that development to make sure that at some point along there we know where those what they're doing in those transition points. And obviously this accelerated learning is a transition point, a major transition point.
Well, the benefits to the student and their family are obvious. We're trying to figure out how we can increase that participation rate, whatever the number may be. Mm-hmm. So, thank you all.
Thank you.
Got some more experts here. Why don't we bring up Matt Coleman from Springfield and Rob Hess from Lebanon.
How you doing?
Good afternoon.
apologize, both Rob and I, if we don't get the formalities down. So, okay. Mr. Chair.
Don't worry about it.
Sir, yes. Very good. What we're going to do is just talk a little bit about.
Just start off with your name.
Thank you. I'm coachable. Yeah. Matt Coleman, Springfield Public Schools. We'd just like to talk about is two kind of key pieces to this conversation specific to Springfield. And the first one is the longstanding relationship we've had with Lane Community College and specifically with their High School Connections program. And we'll be able to tease out some of the practical, I think, on the ground kind of, you know, in a community, what does this mean around dual enrollment. We've had a long term relationship with Lane Community College, and specifically with opportunities for students to be taking coursework in the professional technical areas, so your auto shops, your wood shops, your business, etc., that is fully articulated with LCC, but our courses being taught by our high school instructors on our campus. We're proud in Springfield that we've been able to maintain a full range of professional technical programs when unfortunately many other programs from across the state have had to be cut over really the last 20 years. In this and in these programs, this past year we had 7,000 credits earned by over 1,000 students in Springfield. We have approximately 3,000 high school students per year, so for 2011, 10-11, we had over 7,000 credits earned. And we look at this that's a big part of our dual credit program and providing advanced options for kids. We are continuing to look to expand and to provide as many opportunities for kids to earn dual credit. We see it as a return on investment that in the sense that our kids in our community are earning credits towards graduating from high school but simultaneously starting their college career. So we actually see it as the right type of investment we should be making. Our mindset, and this is supported obviously by having Nancy Golden as our superintendent and President Wilde from LCC and the president's office at the University of Oregon, we are working together to try to figure out how to expand and do this better and to expand opportunities for kids, not to restrict them. We are not looking at the dollars as being ours. We look at the dollars being our students' dollars. So when we get our ADM from the state, we want our kids to be getting the kind of credit that's going to propel them forward to their future. And if that means engaging and enrolling in a course either on site through our dual credit program with specific courses, or completing, for example, the ACEs, the auto, to a point where they need to move on to LCC, they're going to move on to LCC, and we're going to make sure we take care of using the ADM that we get to pay for their enrollment there, because that's the course that the individual student's on. We are looking and actively seeking ways to expand the opportunities. It's I know you guys all know that we're facing, you know, the realities we faced over the last 4 years. And so for us to actually be able to continue to provide for kids, we have to think outside the box. And so this fall, we will be hosting at Springfield High School, specifically Intro to Health Occupations, a course that we had in our program years ago, was eliminated because of budgets. We're going to bring it back, and we will be contracting with LCC to provide the instructor and to provide that course on site for students. And again, the big idea is we've got kids that they want to explore health careers, and there's no reason not to allow for that. I mean, we have the ability to do that, and we're going to be doing that. Just in terms of the transition to community college, in class of 2011, about 27% of our graduates transitioned to a two-year program. Now, obviously, we've got proximity to LCC, so that's definitely a big draw. But when you have kids that are earning multiple credits to LCC, it becomes that foot in the door. And I can't tell you how many of these kids actually had dual credit, but we believe that many, if not most, of our students, of the 27% who transitioned to a two-year college, the majority of our kids, about 85%, went to LCC, and we're confident that they went there with a transcript that had already been established and started through our program. Another piece that I'd like to talk a little bit about that is kind of a new initiative for us in Lane County that definitely is being spearheaded by many leaders within the community is College Ready Lane County. And the intended outcome with College Ready Lane County is to increase college enrollment, retention, and completion for a wider range of students from our local community, with an emphasis and focus on students who would be or are first-generation college attendees. This is an effort that is being spearheaded by the President's Office at the University of Oregon, that LCC is very involved in, that the three larger districts in the area, Bethel, Springfield, and Eugene, are all participating in, and that our ESD in support of the smaller districts in Greater Lane County are all involved in. There are a number of kind of key strategies, and I'd like to speak just a few of them. The first one is developing a different type of networking between the instructors at each of the institutions, and to bring them together in ways that we have not historically. When we do dual enrollment, we have lots of time for folks to come together, and it is around curriculum and it's around pacing, but it's not necessarily the deep kind of core work that needs to happen with curriculum. And we want to develop the kind of relationships so that the math department at the University of Oregon at LCC understands what we are trying to get done K-12 in terms of mathematics, and that we are understanding what we need to get done to truly have our kids prepared to move on to college without the need for remediation. The other piece is around data, and it's quite interesting. Senator Steiner Hayward, I do have a background in measurement, and it's somewhat comical that LCC uses the AccuPlacer for placement, and the University of Oregon uses the Compass for placement, and each institution kind of has their own flavor of what they do, and I get a sense of it. I worked within one of those institutions, which is K-12. We give the ACT to all of our juniors in Springfield, which is not what everybody does in the state, but it's been frustrating because as we're looking for those leading indicators that would suggest whether a kid is ready to progress without the need for remediation, we're having to figure out how to navigate between multiple measures, and that is one of the pieces that our group with College Ready Lane County is looking to tackle, is how do we get on the same page so that we understand what the measurements are that we're using to try to project forward where kids are in relation to being ready for college.
Mr. Chair.
Mayor Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. So that's interesting. There's no standard instrument that we use between the community colleges and OUS to determine placement at all?
Not to my knowledge, definitely not in Lane County.
So someone could go to Western Oregon and test into a certain year of Spanish or test out of a certain level of math, but not do the same thing if they went to Eastern or OIT or...
I think what we'd find is the Compass and AccuPlace are probably actually quite comparable in terms of where they actually place students. It's just the fact that we don't use them, so the same ones, and so we have different languages around those.
Off the cuff, not going to hold you to this, but would it be more useful if everybody were using both the high schools and the community colleges and all of OUS were using the same instruments?
We believe, and I can speak to College Ready Lane County and the conversation we've been having, that this is a big part of what we need to get done, because we believe it actually would be helpful. It would be helpful to inform the right kinds of conversations in terms of, I think of it as blurring the edges between 11, 12, and 13, 14. So in College Ready Lane County, that is one of the tasks that we're off on trying to figure out, is how do we come together around a measurement model that allows us to communicate better.
Thank you.
I just kind of throw these last few thoughts out. Our board goal in Springfield Public Schools is to see 75% of our students leaving our system with dual credit. Currently, about 35% of our kids do. So when you think about 1,000 kids, like I said last year, about 3,000 kids total. In terms of who's walking out the door, it's 35%. That's not good enough. We know there is a wide research base on that was already spoken to regarding that dual credit participation as being a leading indicator for kids that are going to be successful at the next level. And so we are seeing that. It will be in our achievement compact. That is something we are paying attention to. That's something we're going to hold ourselves accountable to. And when we talk 75%, we recognize that we've got to be continuing to evolve our practice and not look to protect what has been. We've got to think differently. A subordinate goal kind of with that is this idea that of those kids that are leaving, we're looking for 12 plus credits. in dual enrollment for our kids. It's our belief in Springfield that there is great potential to leverage change within the K-12 system if we start to think about outcomes differently than just a high school diploma, regardless of what we attach to that diploma and the proficiency requirements. And don't get me wrong, I'm not bashing that. I'm just suggesting that we believe that if we were looking at a different type of outcome that included dual enrollment, that included completion or successful progression in the 19th and 20th age 19 and 20, or the 13th and 14th year, that would lend itself to allowing us to focus differently. And specifically, the idea that 6th through 10th grade as a secondary system is about getting kids prepared to engage successfully in dual enrollment. And then the 11th and 12th grade year is a focus on what kids are doing 11, 14. And we think that would actually provide us some leverage within our system that we haven't seen in many ways ever, both with faculty but also with the community and specifically with parents. In a different kind of social compact that you would be making with a family in terms of sixth grade. The other thing that has been interesting, and I know this is true at the University of Oregon, and I can't speak to any other of the OUS systems, but where they struggle the most in terms of kids persisting is actually not between the between the freshman and sophomore year, but between the junior and senior year, and it's often driven by economics. This was fascinating to me, and a guy named Roger Thompson, who's the dean of admissions down there, would be the person to contact about this specifically, but it's at that point that federal support for individuals starts to run out, and state support runs out, and they're kind of on their own dime. And again, as we look at this and we look at College Ready Lane County, our hope would be that we are providing students with a running start that, again, with this idea of return on investment, gives them a head start before they're borrowing on their own, because at least at the University of Oregon, that is where they see folks fall off the map. Again, with we see everything's being talked about today. We do AP. We do not do IB, but we do advanced placement. All of this is part of our package to try to get kids what they need. And we see the potential for dual enrollment in any form or fashion as the optimal investment, because the return is potentially twofold in terms of the high school diploma, as well as the running start on college.
Thank you, Superintendent.
So my name is Rob Hess, superintendent of Lebanon Schools, and so you've been learning about ways that students in high school can earn college credits. And so we've talked about the College Now kind of programs where a teacher is trained, delivers college content in a high school setting. A student gets high school credit and the college credit transcripted. And then the AP programs, where a student learns a curriculum and demonstrates proficiency on a test, and if they score 3, 4, or 5 on that test, then they'll earn college credit. And the third way that the state has provided is through the Expanded Options Program. Now, the Expanded Options Program is where a student actually goes to the college campus and takes the courses, and they're treated just like as if they were a college student. So what we did in Lebanon is really looked at that, when that law passed, as a way to give kids opportunities to break through that college barrier, because we have so many needy kids in our community. And our rate of, there's about 12% of our population has bachelor's degrees in the Lebanon area, and that's, the state average is like 28%, and some of our leading counties are at 50, 55%. So we have a long ways to go, and a lot of barrier, a lot of first-generation college students in our community. We've done this program for 5 years now, and we've perfected it. We think we've got a program that works and that can scale. This year, we're serving 200 students in this program, and what this means is that when a student is in Lebanon on their plan and profile, they can elect to go for a standard diploma, or they can elect to go for what's called an expanded diploma. And if they choose an expanded diploma, then part of their coursework they're going to need to take is going to be at Lynn Benton Community College. So as you've heard the program explained, we receive the ADM, and then LBCC bills us, and then we write that check, so we serve that student. We have two full-time staff that work with these students, and they follow up with them, they counsel them, they do all of that college. You know, when Dr. Connolly talks about what it takes for a student to be successful in college, it's not just skills, it's the college knowledge. It's knowing how to fill out the FAFSA. It's knowing how to study properly. It's knowing how to go to class when no one's bugging you to get to class. It's all of those things that they don't teach you in high school. And so these are the things that we're able to teach these students. And we've got over 90% success rate of the students that take these courses because of the support they get. And it's pretty exciting. So I've got a lot of data based on what you may want to know in terms of how many students we've served and what they've achieved. But it's a pretty exciting program. And I'll just conclude my intro here with I always like hearing from students, because everything we build it from the student perspective. And this is what, you know, and these kind of emails come through on a regular basis to us. So this student says, I'm very excited to begin my college early, and I just want to also tell you this program is awesome, especially for people like myself. I come from a low-income family, so this program makes it so much more possible for me to attend college, get a head start, and not be worried financially. It's just really cool that you guys provide something like this. Thank you so much, and I hope to hear back soon. So we have real relationships, mentoring relationships with every student who's in this program, and it's making a huge difference for us.
Well, that's terrific. You know, when you said we give you an option, you the expanded option. Mm-hmm. The other one, I guess I was thinking, well, don't give them the option. Just let everybody take that expanded option. But you guys have a hard job. I mean, sometimes we forget that. Well, we'd all like everybody to be on that college track.
It's right.
Really hard enough to keep some kids just in high school mm-hmm. to begin with. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, and we think, and going back to like that option, I think when we talked about how can we expand this as a state, you know, if we're, you know, we're serious about getting to this 40-40-20, and if this is, we want to make this a reality, you know, Washington provides something called Running Start, which is, you know, any student that wants to get on the college campus can, and they get it paid for. Whereas in Oregon, you know, if you're lucky enough to find the way, or if you know someone that can show you the path, or a district goes out on a limb and invents their program, then, you know, you can be there. But we really need to develop things at scale so that every student has opportunities like students in Lebanon get. We get, you know, multiple students that that do inter-district transfers just to come to Lebanon so they can do this program. And we'll help any district that wants to set it up. You know, it takes effort. It takes, you know, you have to go to the community colleges. You have to form relationships. You have to get through, you know, who's getting the money and the ownership and really focus on the student. But all of these things are possible.
Well, that part, that relationship, you know, it sounds like that has to be finessed, and
mm-hmm.
evidently it works better in some places than mm-hmm. others. It works well with your relationship with Lynn Benton. Is there something that the state should do, or should we draft legislation to take that, take the variables out of that, so that it just automatically has to work and there's no issue?
Whatever you put incentives towards, people do. So if there's ways that you incentivized districts or community colleges that reached out and did these type of programs, you would find them doing it. It's just, I hate to say it that way, but that's what we find. That works. When there's grants out there that we can create, you know, new things, people go after the grants. And if there are ways, I know that hopefully with OEIB getting on board, there'll be some creative ways that they can encourage districts and community colleges to form these relationships. We really need to break down the silos. We've been talking about it for a long time, and there are ways we can do it already in the law.
Senator Moore?
Thank you, Rob, mm-hmm. for the work you do. Some of you know that Lebanon's my hometown, and I graduated from Lebanon High School. And there were times when the district performed very well, and there were times when it didn't perform quite so well. But under Rob's leadership, it's doing outstanding, and I just want to compliment you publicly on what you do. The question I had is, what's the difference between the conventional high school student and, you know, just staying in the high school versus taking the college credit at Lindbeck and you paying the cost. Mm-hmm. Is there money that resides with the district after you have paid the fees?
There is. We basically, the way the program works now, with it's almost similar to to like an online school or a charter school where it's like an 80-20 split, you know, a 70-30 split, is that the ADM you receive, there's some upfront money to get started because you basically have to hire some people to get it going before the money starts balancing out. But we're at the point now where the program is paying for two staff people to manage it. So it and we implemented it over time, so it's not like we lost teachers at the high school to do the program. And so and right now we have you know, what this program does, unfortunately, is artificially lowers our 4-year cohort rate, because we have students that will do this in 5 years or 6 years. So we know that, my board knows that, and they understand that we're providing a service that makes those numbers go down. But
we should rethink the technology of coming up with that rate so it doesn't unfairly.
Yeah, and you know, the way that the compacts are written, there is there's a spot on the compacts for the 4-year, the 5-year, and there's also a required line of students that are earning 9 or more college credits. So these things we've been talking about the data is going to be there real soon, you know, because we're all going to have to report on this. So it's coming, disaggregated.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to play devil's advocate for a minute, putting on my mom hat and my family doctor hat mm-hmm. rather than my senator hat.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's all part of the same thing.
Yeah.
I worry a little sometimes about having kids grow up a little too fast mm-hmm. and having them being forced to differentiate in terms of what they want to do. Now, obviously, mm-hmm. the kinds of classes that they're taking as part of early option
mm-hmm.
or dual credit or any of these other mm-hmm. versions tend to be more generic, everybody needs to take them anyway classes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the advantage mm-hmm. we have with the AAOT. You get your first 2 years of GE requirements
right.
done. But I also worry a little bit about kids being exposed to students significantly older than themselves and being put in situations that aren't age appropriate. And I would be interested in your experience about how you help high school students, you know, 16-year-olds mm-hmm. who are spending a lot of time with 19 yeah. or 20-year-olds make appropriate choices and not succumb to, we have issues with drug and alcohol use, with premature sexual activity, with all sorts of things that I worry about. Don't get me wrong. I'm completely on your yeah. side. I think what you're doing is fabulous. But I want to think about whole kids here a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
Yeah. Of the 200 students that we're serving right now in this program, we have 1 10th grader, 6 11th graders. So it's not the common experience to have those kind of age gaps. We have 35 12th graders, 58 13th graders, and 14 graders. So people that are 2 years removed.
Okay.
So there is, but we do a lot of, it's really a lot of support. I mean, there's a lot of meetings with parents where they understand this is a different experience that their students sign up for. They're going to have to be able to get to this location. And there's mandatory meetings that they go to, orientation meetings where they need to take all of their assessments going in to get properly placed. There's a lot of support on the front end to hopefully alleviate some of those risks. But there are risks associated with those type of things, and it's really involvement in education is how we try to mitigate against them.
Thank you.
But we haven't had a lot of. At least across my desk, people saying, hey, I quit this program because, of what's going on. Usually it's the opposite. The students are removing themselves from negative things that are happening at the high school environment to go to the college environment as opposed to the other way around.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you both. Excellent and very helpful. Ryan Craig, Laura Roach, Bo Yates.
And Mr. Yates couldn't make it today, and he's a principal at Lebanon High School, so I know about the program, so I'll stay up here for that one, too.
Oh.
Unless you want me to take a seat.
You stand by.
Chair Hask, members of the committee, I'm Brian Krieg to here today. A little bit more official role as a member of the Career and Technical Education Revitalization Committee, the committee that is involved with advice and oversight for the career technical education legislation you all passed back in 2011. Very good news to report to you again today about that program. In April, we reviewed 43 applications that came in for the grant monies for that program. We selected 8 programs to get funding. I have to say that it met many of the challenges we put in front of the folks. We were looking for geographic diversity, size diversity. We got both of those things. We had a mixture of types of schools, big schools, small schools, charter schools, ones that were collaborations across different units, different jurisdictions across the state. I have to say that the folks that put in the applications, we saw some great stuff, and we wish that we could have funded well over 20 of them. The ideas, the enthusiasm that was shown from the different districts and the folks coming in, it was amazing. And we felt that there was even more folks that were interested, but it was a short timeline. This is a very aggressive timeline. I have to compliment the Boley staff and the folks at the Department of Education for the hard work that they did to get this up and rolling, and that we're going to have shop classes and other types of career and technical education classes in schools beginning this fall. As I said about the enthusiasm, what we saw was a lot of outpouring from folks in the communities. The search for partners is one of the important things that we required in the grant, that you had to have some folks working with you and looking for some match dollars. Not total matches, but commitments and long-term commitments for real job path. And we saw that. The types of applications we had ranged from what we thought, shop classes and construction-oriented things, but we had stuff for biotech programs, healthcare, IT programs. It was just it was a very broad spectrum on that. We learned a lot in this process and look forward to coming back to you in the next legislative session with some improvements to the program and hopefully the ability to expand it. At this point, that'll conclude my comments here, but you've got two people that can fill in a lot of the gaps on this here.
Okay.
Senator Hast and members of the committee, I'm Laura Roach. I'm the director of the secondary post-secondary transitions team at the Department of Education, and that is the team where career and technical education is seated. And as Brian indicated to you, you guys graciously approved a grant for us last year to add to career and technical education. High schools and community colleges get about $15 million a year, a little less, going down every year, from the federal government to run career and technical education programs. And in relationship to your conversation here about dual credit, every one of these 800 high school programs are required to have alignment to a post-secondary opportunity. And they are required to have alignment and articulation wherever possible so that students who start in career and technical education, whether it's medical or healthcare or childcare or whatever, have a next step opportunity. The grant that you gave us this past year gave us the opportunity to work more closely with business and industry, to work more closely with our apprenticeship programs, and to further develop business and industry partnerships. I wanted to share with you that there were 43 proposals from across the state requesting $9,663,000. We had $2 million to administer. The total schools that would be touched by your contributions are 156 Midland high schools, and every one of them had a post-secondary community college partner and business and industry partners. They had projected match of $800,000 from business and industry. So we wanted to give you a chance today to say thank you to you and also to share with you that the work that you're doing around dual credit, articulated credit, and alignment is an integral part of the work that you ask us to do on these new grants and the ongoing grants. We recently just got some data match back and found that 55% of our CTE students who have taken one or more classes are showing up in post-secondary education. We know that these students need some form of education past high school. They may not need a four-year university degree in all cases, but they do need some post-secondary education. So we're very pleased with that. We don't have a huge population of students in CTE. We're looking at about 22% of our high school students in CTE and about 64% of our post-secondary community college students in CTE. But of those that are there, we see them moving forward. So we wanted to thank you for the effort you made, and our relationship with business and industry has certainly grown, and I think we'll be able to further leverage their resources.
Sitting in for Beau Yates.
Senator Haas and members of the committee, we're really excited about this opportunity with this grant. Lebanon School District, Albany School District, Corvallis has partnered together to provide services for our students in this collaborative effort. So what we did is we looked at, each of us had, you know, one or two strong programs and then ones that were, you know, have been cut back. And so what this will allow us to do is be able to provide a range of experiences for all of these students in the Valley. And we've blocked schedules, and we're working on transportation so that students can have excellent experiences and really be able to build these programs. We believe that these essential skills of reading, writing, and math can, for some students, best be taught in these type of programs. And so, you know, all of these teachers as part of these programs get trained in how to deliver math problems that can help them meet the diploma requirements and reading and writing. So these are really it's not your traditional shop anymore. It's really about applied learning, 21st century skills, and in environments that a lot of kids can make careers out of. And so we've partnered with LBCC in our collaborative, along with a local apprenticeship program. So we're pretty excited about the opportunities.
Questions? Well, thank you, and thanks to the panelists before. I really, really believe that this area between 11 and 13 really holds the most promise for us to get at these issues that we're working on. College affordability is perhaps the most obvious, but also it attacks the 40-40-20 goal, and it also gives, I think, students in high school a more productive high school career, if you will, more productive and more efficient. So I really think there's a lot of promise there. I hope we can do more, and I would challenge you to help us if there is something we can do in the way of new state laws or whatever we can do to increase the participation of your students into some of these classes, because as was noted earlier, I think this does look like it's a determinant of what happens in the future for a lot of these people. So. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to switch gears somewhat here and take up a panel. Rob Wagner's team from PCC that's going to showcase a Future Connect program that they call Future Connect. We've got Rob, Josh Laurie, Pam Blumenthal.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Wagner. I'm the Government Relations Director for Portland Community College. And in interest of time, I'm going to keep my testimony very limited and turn it over to our experts with this innovative program to talk about the first-year cohort review of a program that we just brought online at PCC, which I think actually is a seamless conversation from what you were just talking about with dual credit and looking at the challenges that students face moving from high school into college. A couple quick statistics on what we know, everything you know, that the future workforce will require additional education and training, that adults that have an associate's degree and a bachelor's degree do much better financially. According to a recent report, it was $5,000 per year more with an associate's and $7,000 a year better with a bachelor's. Another quick statistic, and what we know, is that not enough students are graduating. And to remain globally competitive, the U.S. will need to produce 24 million additional degrees by 2025 to achieve a 60% degree attainment rate. At the current rate nationally, we're only looking at bringing on 280,000. So there's 24,280,000. So we need to look at some ways to increase that number. Here in Oregon, you've even set a more aggressive goal with the 40-40-20 vision and with the future of education policy in Oregon. This will require significant financial investment, and it will also require targeting resources in program areas, in programs like Future Connect, which maximize the chances of student success. And most importantly, today, you're going to hear from a student and a college success coach on the human scale that it's not just dead statistics. Sometimes I think we focus so much on that, but there's real lives that are impacted here in terms of first-generation low-income students having and gaining access to the American dream, to be able to attend college and be able to make a life for themselves. So our competing force is that we're serving 40% more students with 20% less funding from the state, as well as with expectations for outcomes that are increasing. So programs like this are, I think, going to be even more valuable. And I think leveraging private philanthropic resources, as well as local match, where we can, to bring degrees online and provide these opportunities, as this program will demonstrate, is a good first opportunity to have this conversation with the state. So with that, I will turn it over to Pam to talk about the recent history of the program, and then Josh is going to run through some slides, and then we'll turn it over to our college success coach, a student, and a member from our PCC Foundation. Thank you.
Senator Hash and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Pam Blumenthal. I'm the director of alternative programs at Portland Community College, and I want to take the opportunity to tell you a little bit about Future Connect and how it got started in Portland, serving Multnomah County low-income first-generation high school graduates. And the program was started between our college president, Dr. Preston Pulliams, and the mayor of Portland, Sam Adams. They had a conversation a couple of years ago about needing to provide access to any student in Multnomah County that needed access to college. And really, when further exploration of this idea came about, they knew that money wasn't the only thing that students needed to be successful. We needed to build in the supports to help students that haven't navigated college before and don't have the family supports to navigate college. So we've built this program, Future Connect, which Josh is going to talk more about the details of. But we've built it on a foundation of best practices. In our department at PCC, we have the Gateway to College program, which is a national model built on supports of a cohort model, very intensive student support, which involves advising, mentoring, case management. We also at PCC have two TRIO programs, the ROOTS programs, which are also targeted at low-income first-generation college students who also need remediation. We have another program, Project Degree, that is a new program focused on students that come without college skills and getting them accelerated to within two terms to be at college level. So we have a firm foundation in a vast array of programs to help students be successful. Future Connect is combining the college resources and the city money, and we also are leveraging school district supports as we are going into the schools to connect with students before they graduate. We also are students are supported through Workforce Investment Act dollars, through summer works programs, through our work systems organization that helps students get ready for their transition and explore careers before they even enter college. So this is our first year. We're just finishing up, but we've had some very early successes. We served about 140 students this year, and we have 200 students that have been accepted for next fall that are all have graduated within this year at Portland Community College. And I'll let Josh tell you more about the model.
Excellent. Chair Hess and members of the committee, thank you for letting me speak on behalf of Future Connect. For the record, my name is Joshua Laurie, and I'm the manager of the program.
Josh, you can talk back. It's okay.
All right. Yeah, there we go.
Good foot is your fine.
Thank you. I have a presentation. My students tell me I'm a little bit tangential at times, so this will keep me on point. One of the things that we start with is for every 10 Multnomah County students who enter high school, 6 will graduate, 4 will go to college, and 2 will complete. Future Connect really focuses on this last number of 2 completing. What we do is we work with individuals within the high schools to help them not only access college, but succeed. And we do that through a myriad of supports. I'm going to go through this rather quickly for time, but for us, we start with eligible students. And quite simply, the student for Future Connect program should be a first-generation or low-income student. We're working with all students, however, within the Multnomah County schools. So any residual resources that we provide as outreach benefit everyone. But the students who are awarded the scholarship and enter the program are specifically first-generation and low-income. We also connect to the Summer Youth Connect programs. Therefore, we're reaching out to students who we actually give them priority to students who complete one or more of those programs over the course of their high school career. The supports at this program are key, and while it's a scholarship program and scholarship implies money, probably what eclipses the money is actually the supports that we provide, and that comes mainly through the idea of a college success coach. And what we've done is we've created 4 college success coach positions. These personalized academic advisors help students navigate the college experience. So quite simply, those college success coaches go out in the high schools or alternative schools within the student's senior year and begin working and connecting to students who are both applying and pre-contemplative about college. The idea is to break down some of those barriers that exist for students who don't otherwise have those supports at home or within their family or within their community. These are actual currently PCC staff, and what we're doing is developing a caseload, if you will, of students who are about to transition to college. We do specific PCC advising in that senior year, and we also do contemplative, what we call kind of pre-contemplative college advising. So for students who are maybe thinking about going to college, but they don't know how, or they don't understand the financial literacy or the financial aid aspect of it, we help break down some of those barriers for them.
I'm going to let you keep talking, then I'll ask questions.
Okay. Excuse me, Senator Stein. Support and resource sharing for students that goes beyond academics. So our college success coaches really work hard to get to know the students, and one of the first things that we do when we meet students out in the schools is we ask them what their dream is and how that ties to college. Currently, our staffing is quite simply 5 positions, myself and 2 college success coaches, and we're out and about in all the high schools in Multnomah County on a daily basis. In addition to this, we have summer bridge activities. So every single student who's awarded the Future Connect scholarship goes through a summer bridge activity and what we call 4 intense orientations to the college. Students come out for an entire day. We walk them through what their college existence will look like. We also do some very specific financial literacy training. We have them meet department heads, and we even connect them to kind of what the classes might be for fall. Most students that we start meeting in high school don't realize that, boy, fall registration happens in July. So students who graduate who otherwise plan to go to PCC but don't understand all the pieces of the puzzle might miss that very important registration date in July. These orientation dates align with that. Second-year students, additionally, who are currently in the Future Connect program, act as peer mentors and leadership. They take on leadership roles in those. So we have a panel of students who have successfully completed a year or 2 years in community college and talk about their experience. So these new first-generation students are able to access that. The other piece of support is cohort-style classes. So every Future Connect student receives both a fall and winter free class that we pay for that is connected to college survival, that's the fall class, and then careers today. And the idea is that these students are accessing their same college success coach in an instructor model. So the college success coach not only case manages them, but also teaches this class. The same individual that was meeting them out in the high school their senior year is now the first instructor they see on campus in fall. So we've become that conduit from high school to college, and we've, for lack of a better term, greased the wheels for these students who otherwise didn't have the support. Today's careers is based on a road trip nation model curriculum, and the students are expected to
interview and research the career that they initially said they were interested in. So we bring in speakers, but also they have to go out in small cohort groups and find someone who's actually doing that work out in the community and develop a presentation for their peers that shows that this is what I said I wanted to do. Do I still want to do that? And what we're finding is that students are learning that there are many different ways to get to what they want to do, that not all careers are linear. And that some of the expectations that we think we put on students are linear. That's not always the case. I didn't end up being an educator because I knew I was going to be an educator in eighth grade. I kind of stumbled into it because I loved it. And finally, obviously, it's a scholarship program, so they do receive scholarship money. Every student who's awarded the scholarship receives a minimum of $600 per year at PCC. So that's a minimum of $1,800 if they were there for 3 years. And the College Success Coaches and the money follows them through that entire time. The idea is that we help transition these students, not just into the community college, but through the community college. And we're really built around not just developing students to come to us to get their needs met. Our focus really helps students develop self-efficacy, so the next system that they jump into, they'll be able to make those decisions, and they'll be able to find resources. And a big piece is also adding these extra resources. So in this slide, we have the GAP, PSU, PCC Foundation. A big piece of what we're doing with the College Success Coach is helping students find additional resources. One thing we did is we developed a relationship with the GAP to come in and do an all-day workshop on how to just basically do job interviewing, something we did in our careers class, but now we have an outside entity coming in, a retail entity coming in and doing an all-day workshop, and they provided $6,000 additional dollars for student scholarships for individuals who went through that. So current students and what we're doing right now, our program goals are simple. We have four goals built around progression, career connection, retention, and completion. Currently, we're hitting all these goals with the exception of career connection. I should say we're at 90% for that second one. And our goal is 95%, so it's quite high to have students to actually participate in two or more career development activities within their first year. But we're at 90%, and we have 19 internships currently set up with the bureaus, the city bureaus in Portland. And these are 400-hour internships at $10 an hour just for the summer. Students, and these align with students' third term, their first year in PCC, their third term academics. So if a student wanted to be, maybe had a GIS class, they would apply for the GIS intern at the Water Bureau, and then they would follow through with that internship that would end by the time their second fall term starts. It's really about aligning what as they kind of develop their career interest into something that's relevant and authentic, and then having them reconnect to their academics. And so with that, I hope to hit that 95% with this summer. Currently, 95% of the students are identify as first generation, 70% identify as students of color, and we have 114 students currently enrolled. So we have a 75% retention rate for three terms right now. So we hope to hit that 70% from fall to fall, and things look good. 19 internships, as I said, and thus far we've given out $75,000 of scholarship support. Every year we will award 200 scholarship recipients. One thing we changed this year is we added a wait list. And while we've reached out to over 600 students in the Multnomah County schools, we have a wait list of about 50 students right now. So we've awarded 200, but should a student decide to do something different, what often happens between high school senior year and their fall term, maybe go to the military or take a job at some other place and decide that college might not be a fit, we have a wait list to pop students in who've applied and gone through the process, and we've already developed the relationship with them throughout their senior year. Finally, what does the budget look for all this? The average cohort cost, and a cohort cost runs about 2 years with the third year of scholarship money, is about $775,000. Currently, the city of Portland funds just about half of that at $380,000 for each cohort. And PCC and the PCC Foundation match the city's funds for each of these cohorts. So PCC Foundation is raising this on a regular basis. And to give you an idea of the percentage of scholarships, right now we have 40% of that budget is dedicated just to scholarships. So just a little bit under half. But that's why I also say I think the supports are just as, if not more, important. So that's kind of a quick overview of a program. I apologize if I went so quickly, but I wanted to make sure I hit all those points about what we are trying to do with students in Multnomah County.
Well, I appreciate that. It's outstanding. And
Go ahead. Well, I was going to make one brief point before we turn it over to the next panel, and I just want to be sensitive to everyone's time this afternoon. But my understanding is that it's in the 30s in terms of that what the cohort is relative. So you saw that 75% retention. But if you just took a control group of first-generation low-income students and where they're starting, you're looking at what's the year-over-year fall?
Well, fall to fall is about 27% for that same demographic. For the typical community college students, about 52%.
And the money comes from the City of Portland and the foundation on PCC matches.
Partnership.
Thank you.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you. This is fabulous, okay? This is totally cool. Those of you who know me know that when I see something really cool, I just want more of it. So the question I have, right? So the question I have is this. Historically, one of the concerns we've seen recently is that a lot of the kids, when they hit their first year of college, because of a range of challenges that they faced in secondary education, is that they really actually need remedial work in their first year at PCC. And obviously, these are kids who aren't necessarily eligible for dual credit or expanded options, so that's why they're in this kind of a program as opposed to being in one of those programs, which I know Portland also has. But I guess my concern is that the other evidence, things from like I Have a Dream, suggest that the earlier we start talking about college with kids, the more likely they are to take their academics seriously in school. And I know, for example, from a program that my husband and I are involved with at Open Meadows, which is an alternative school in Portland, that one of the ways they're doing this is to start with identifying kids when they're 8th or 9th graders in their program and having the conversation with them about what are your dreams, how are you going to achieve them, and when, you know, if that's your dream, how do you map a path through high school that's going to get you there? And I'm a little curious as to why you chose to wait until the fall of senior year. You know, I'm speaking from a parent who comes from a very different perspective. So I've got an MD. You know, we're not talking first generation in my family, but you know, my kids have been talking about college since they were five. So it's a little different, but it's that mindset, and they've been getting college counseling in school since they were 10th graders. So I'd be interested in your thinking around that.
Senator Hayward, I'd be happy to answer. I think we glossed over it a little bit, but this scholarship is really based on the Summer Youth Connect programs, which is ninth grade counts, which starts actually in the transition from 8th to 9th grade. That's one of the Summer Youth Connect programs. And then there is
C3
between the 9th and 10th grade, and then Summer Works between the 10th and 11th grade.
Okay.
So those students that have been engaged in those programs, and those programs are building over time, those students are the priority one students. So it's a continuum that's being built with career and college exploration happening really early.
Okay.
And then the focus is this is the product of that. We have expanded the opportunities because there aren't enough students who've gone through all those programs yet to be eligible to make up the 200. But the plan with the city is that eventually those students will be coming directly from those programs.
Chair Hess and Senator Steiner Hayward, if I could add also, we have 13 ninth grade counts visits with 60 plus students per visit coming out to the college over the summer. And what we did last summer is we had 11. So we're meeting those students who are transitioning from 8th grade to 9th grade in those visits via our outreach team. And then I'm presenting to them and saying, you know, when you finish this program, when you finish high school, we're waiting here for you. So some of that is happening at that level.
Thank you. That's very helpful. I wasn't aware of that piece.
Well, thank you. Let's bring up the rest of your team. Senator Morris. Sorry.
Thank you. Senator Steiner Hayward caused me to come to mind of a book that I just recently read by Jim Clifton. He's the chairman of Gallup. You all know Gallup, worldwide.
Yeah.
And the title of the book is The Coming Jobs War. And he has a section in that book where he talks about the dropout and the kids that just don't make it. They fall through the cracks. And he was saying that there's really just one metric that really would work if schools would use it. And it's exactly what you were talking about. You start at the early grade, and you measure the student's confidence that they will go to college and have a successful career. And you then track that, those students, based on their confidence level, you know, highly likely, somewhat unlikely. And the kids that are at risk, they show. And then you concentrate on those children to get them out of that mindset into, I will be successful and I will go to college.
That's interesting.
I found it very interesting because it, you know, we test the heck out of kids and we've got all kinds of metrics and, you know, and sometimes we lose, I think, sight of where we're going. But this was a very intriguing metric to use.
Mm-hmm. Very intriguing.
And I would suggest, it's a very good book to read and very stimulating.
Chair Hass, Senator Morse, thanks for that comment. And we often get the question of whether or not a program like this is scalable. So can we bring something like this online? And we're in preliminary conversations with a couple mayors from Washington County and looking at trying to do something like that. And I think the key, and you'll hear this from our foundation board chair, who's the head of our corporate and business outreach effort, is looking at programs like this that attract private sector match as well, and so that we could actually scale this too. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, Dara Khan, Angel Tran, Cheryl Hinnerman from the Foundation Board.
Yeah, go for it.
Senator Hass and distinguished members of the panel. For the record, my name is Cheryl Hinnerman, and I have a passion for workforce development. I came by it honestly. I worked for Intel Corporation for over 21 years. And while I was training manager there, we built the microelectronics technology program in partnership with PCC. And it was a very successful way to develop our workforce, both internally and future hires. And when I became the workforce development manager for the Pacific Northwest International, we leveraged that program by replicating it in 140 colleges around the country and in 7 countries around the world. So I know that those business partnerships with education work. And when we involve the government money from the ministries of education or the state services, we know that those programs are sustainable and replicable, and they can be leveraged big to do the job for a number of industries. So after I retired from Intel, I was hired by PCC to do the startup for their Center for Business and Industry, and I told them that it would probably take 1 to 3 years to do the startup, and then I was going to retire again, which I did. So the Center for Business and Industry is now the CLIMB Center, and it does leverage that workforce development model from Intel to build business and education partnerships with the college in a number of industries for workforce training, for education, and to build that. Of course, I love the school, and I can't leave workforce development, so in my retirement, I'm part of the PCC Foundation Board. And I chair, guess what, the Committee on Corporate Partnerships, because I can't let go of it because it works, and I want to see it happen. I think the saddest part for us as workforce development managers throughout the last decades is that most of the students we would see in our programs were late 20s, early 30s, and they had stumbled around underemployed or unemployed for far too many years before they were inspired to come back to school and then had to retrofit their basic education before they could take a strong technical program like the one we were serving. So what really warms my heart is this whole dual credit thing that we've been hearing about this afternoon, as well as the partnership with Future Connect, because it captures the imagination interest of students young and gets them inspired to not leave school, but to stay focused and to leverage their time in school and to get into a program that's going to get them a good job. And we all know that what the economy has been like, you know, so to go out there with nothing means that we're going to have a dead weight of citizens who can't work. But if we give them inspiration and we get them in programs, they're going to have jobs, because the companies are going to make sure that those education programs fit jobs they have to offer. They wouldn't be funding them with equipment, teacher training, and scholarships. So I think in your situation where you're looking at limited resources, certainly to leverage those where good money is already being spent for good purpose is the best way to go. And if you can add to that, where we have business partnerships with the colleges and the high schools, we know that we're going to have success. We're going to keep doing it, but we can do it bigger and better with more resources, and that's what we're after. On the PCC Foundation Board, we are inspired every year because we make more money for scholarships. But every year we have more applicants, so there continues to be a gap. So if we had the money this year, 5 years ago, we would have served everyone. But we're still short because in hard times, where do they come? The community colleges, to be able to retrofit their education and training and be more competitive. So we're always chasing that money to try to make sure that people do have access and then they are successful. And I think the biggest piece of Future Connect from the business person's perspective is that gift of encouragement. We can give money, we can give equipment, we can give training, and we can find students who have need. But if they're going to fall out of school because they get despair, they don't have enough money for a bus pass, or their babysitting fell apart, or they got sick and behind and no one cared, with a program like Future Connect, they are given the best gift. They are given a gift that someone cares. And that has made all the difference in every one of the programs that we've worked with worldwide. Those students are the ones who succeeded and the ones who gave that gift to someone else. So that's where the pay it forward really works, with not only money, but focus and encouragement and results. Because these people get jobs and they earn money and they pay taxes, and maybe next time around you'll have more money to spend on good things because we'll have more people working. So that's our message.
Thank you.
Senator Hass and members of the committee, my name is Dara Kohn, and I am one of the college success coach. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to share our story. I wanted to share a personal story about why I came to PCC and why I chose, and love this job so much. I am a minority from, I was born and raised from Cambodia and Thailand. And I lived there in the refugee camp with my parents until 6 years old. And I don't think that I remember so much of the traumatic and violence until I came to America to learn about the Khmer Rouge and what had happened. And then I remember the story of my mother saying, even though we don't have education and we don't have the resources, America will give you the chance. And I remember the strength in her voice when she said that, and I didn't know what America looked like. But my best friend and I in Cambodia would walk to school, Chinese private school, every day, and we said, I'm going to America. You're going to Spain. What does America mean? Mm-hmm. And I didn't know America. I've never seen an American. I've never seen blonde hair, blue eyes. I've never seen anybody that didn't look Asian. And when I first landed in America, our sponsor, Gloria, was the first American I saw. Blonde hair, blue eyes, heavier set woman, gave me a big hug, and she said, welcome to America. This is the land of opportunity. And I did not know English, and I did not understand English. But I remember what she said to me. And I remember, and when I started going to school, I believed it. I believed it, and just like I believe in the students that I work with every day, I believe that you do have a fair chance when you get to college. I think high school, you don't have the maturity to understand the opportunities that you do have yet. And I think that college, especially community college, is your second chance at life and at being exactly who you want to be. And the person I wanted to be was a mentor. I wanted to be a mentor because my mentor had helped me out, and she made me see the light and see the opportunity. So I said, Mrs. France, how do I get there to be successful? I can't read. I can't write. My parents don't speak English. I don't understand normal words, general words. So how do I become smart in school? She said, if you keep trying, Dara, you keep trying and you keep trying and you don't give up, somebody along the way will help you and continue to give you the support that you need. I didn't believe it yet because I wasn't sold. I hadn't been given a lot of opportunities. Mrs. France followed me from high school to college and to my profession now as a college success coach and an instructor. She always gave me the love and support unconditionally. The reason why I'm sitting here today is because I believe in each and every one of these students, and I believe that they didn't know, they didn't have the opportunity to respond to the question, truly, what is success? What makes you success? What is success? What motivates you? And I think when they came to us at PCC, in August, when I met with them, we asked those questions probably 10 to 20 times. There's lots of assignments that you do, group activities, essays you write, many essays they wrote before they got to PCC. And they still did not know what success meant until the very end. I said, what makes you feel successful? And one student said, serving my community and being able to go to church and help out my church group. And another student said, being able to have a job where I am not talked down to, where I'm valued, my opinions are valued. And the other one said, I want to be a nurse, I want to be a doctor. I said, do you know what a doctor does? Help people. And that was it. And so then when we went into the community, we started researching, what does the medical field mean? What does being a doctor mean? What does being a nurse mean? By the end of the term, they were able to articulate a beautiful meaning of what it meant to them. And the point of this program and the point of my job is to help them just understand themselves a little bit better and figure out their definition of success and their definition of and their means for to be in college. And most of them are so inspirational. And they do want to pay it forward. And it was because they didn't have enough confidence or encouragement or inspiration to look, forward and reach out. And I think that with a program like Future Connect, it gave them the encouragement to admit, exactly where they stand and, to ask for help. And we have students that are homeless, that are sexually abused, physically abused. You name it, we have it. And sometimes they just want us to hear the story and know that, are you sure I can make it too? Can you show me a couple steps? And we show them. We go to the job interviews with them. We drive them to Ross to buy the interview clothes. We sit there and do 5 drafts of cover letter and resumes with them. I practice on the phone with them, with their vocabularies. We come back to the cubicle, to my office, and research things on the internet. It's very hands-on, and it's because I think they were given a second chance from the Future Connect scholarship program. And I want to introduce Angel Tran. She is one of our students that has been very successful, and she has a very unique story of, how she came to her success.
Chairman Haas and members of the community, I'm Angel Tran, a Future Connect student. Future Connect has helped me academically and personally. On an academic level, they have done CG classes. They've given me a place to study. And within the CG classes, I've learned what success is. I've always told myself that I'd be successful. But I learned things such as, to be successful, you have to fail. In society, they don't tell you that failure is a good thing because it teaches you to learn from your mistakes. I've learned about emotional intelligence. I've learned about self-awareness. But most importantly, they have given me a support system. I've lived in a family where my father has mentally abused me. He's an alcoholic, and he's a drug addict. Thank you. My mother has gotten pregnant at a young age, so she has never grown up, and I'm a role model to 3 of my other siblings. And I'm helping them to guide what a success is, because they do not have my parents, because they don't know how to be parents, and my grandparents are minorities. So language is a boundary. I was kicked out at the age of 16. I moved in with my grandparents, but because of the language boundary, it was really difficult, because if she got mad at me, she doesn't know what hate is. So when she said, I'm mad at you, she said, I hate you. So at the time when I was in Future Connect, I knew I was going to go to PCC. I knew I was going to go to a university. But they have given me a place where I feel safe. They have taught me what self-efficacy is. They taught me to go talk to my teachers if I fail a test. I can come to them for anything and have a place, an environment where I feel safe, because I don't have that outside of community college. I have learned a lot from them, and I know Future Connect has been successful because even when I did not meet the requirements of college level, they sent me into another program called Project Degree. And even when I was not a part of Future Connect officially, they always said hi to me. They always said I could come to them, and I was always treated like I was a Future Connect person. I know this program will be successful because people like Dara and Josh and Rebecca and Cheryl that I just met today and Pam and Robert, they're so genuine, you can tell. Cheryl is telling me, comforting, tell you guys that you guys want to spend your money the right way and you want to help us. Robert, he's just like, let's go, do you want some water, being caring. And I can tell Pam does a lot of hard work in the statistics, but I can tell that she cares.
Do you have questions?
Thank you.
Good story. Thank you.
Thank
all
you
for your
much.
Stories. They're wonderful. Cheryl, I know the Intel connection, especially with that Rock Creek branch of PCC, and it's now good to put a face with that success. I mean, it's really for the downstate guys. The Rock Creek campus of PCC is phenomenal. I mean, it's about like Portland State now. And much of it is devoted to the Intel training of those fab plants there that are just a few miles away. And so that's what she was a part of. So
thank you.
Any other questions of our final panel for today? Thank you. Congratulations on this wonderful program. And, of course, you know, hats off to Crescent Point and Mayor Adams for Light and Fire. Maybe they'll start something that will spread.
We hope so. Ms. Tran, thank you for your courage and for your commitment.
Thank you for the water.
Okay, thanks. Our committee, once again, right on time.
Mr. Chair.
We heard from a lot of people who are very passionate about education today. So we are adjourned.